Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. Places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say, it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's show, the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show, as we continue to live in this time of trial and tribulation. Our love and support is for those who are coping and striving, and our sympathies are with those who have suffered loss. So thank you for tuning in. And tonight's host for tonight is Sister Ann Mufmeen, and she has a special guest that she's interviewing who has made a move to relocate. So Sister Ann, I see your phone number. If you could go ahead and press the 1 on your dial, Sister Ann, to go to the top of my queue, and I'll go ahead and open your line. Sister Ann, if you can press that 1 on your dial. There you are. Okay, let me open your line. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Ann.
Wa alaikum salam.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, by Allah's grace. And you?
Okay, I'm doing fine. And I see Sister Jennifer. If you can press the 1 on your dial, Sister Jennifer, I believe I see your number. If you press the 1 on your dial, Sister Jennifer, you go to an IQ, and I'm going to open your line. Sister Jennifer, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here. Assalamu alaikum.
Did you hear, Brother Carlton?
The question is, did you hear?
Yes.
All right. I'll let you all take it from here.
Okay. All right. Well, today we have the pleasure of talking with Sister Jennifer Muhammad. Sister Jennifer moved How many years ago, Sister Jennifer?
I left the state of New Jersey. I was in the Plainfield, New Jersey mosque. I left in 2006.
Okay. Oh, wow. It does not seem like it's been that long.
Yes, ma'am.
Well,
it has. It's...
Yes. Well, I'm going to be talking with Sister Jennifer. Well, really, I'm going to let Sister Jennifer do most of the talking because she has a plethora of information to share with us about her journey and how she has transitioned from being a city girl to a country girl. And it's just wonderful. And I'm going to share a story I heard Sister Jennifer talk about before we end. So right now, I'm going to let Sister Jennifer tell us about herself, her husband, and her journey to the South and how she has found it to be and whether or not she is enjoying it. So,
yes,
Sister Jennifer.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum to everyone on the line. I am, like Sister Ann said, my name is Sister Jennifer Muhammad. I moved to Dublin, Georgia from the city of Plainfield, New Jersey. And I'm sure all of us that if it's believers on here, if not, you probably heard Minister Farrakhan speak about Plainfield. Because when the nation came back together again when under his tutelage, that's a lot of places. It started from New York and Plainfield. But I left Plainfield in 2006. My husband had said to me for years that he wanted to go back to where he was born and raised, and that was the South. But Sister Jennifer was a city girl. I had never even touched dirt. So it was something that I was like, okay, I'm not sure if that's something for me because, like I said, I was born and raised in the city, lived on, you know, on in a city where I was could go around the corner to the store. You know, even growing up, I didn't really, you know, mess in dirt too much. I was, you know, a dainty little girl. So being in the country was and has been something very, very, very new to me. I'm learning a lot, and I have learned a lot. So we left in 2006. I live on 35 acres of land. We have cows. A few years ago, we had goats, but my husband had to transition back to New Jersey for a little bit to take care of some issues that we had here because we still own property here in New Jersey. And so he had to come back up here to New Jersey to take care of that property. And then he finally sold that and he left. And so we stayed. I've been down there, like I said, since 2006. What I've learned is that if you decide to leave the your city life and come to the country, don't come with expectations of, okay, this is going to be so easy. I'm just going to get in here and I'm going to do this because, no, that's not going to happen. That is not what happened to us. I had to learn a lot, and Sister Ann can tell you, I had to learn a lot. I was scared of everything. I didn't really want to, you know, touch dirt, and, you know, I didn't really want the animals near me. So I learned a lot. I've learned a lot in the years that I have been there. We have, like I said, we have cows, we have goats, we have chickens. I'll tell you a story about me and my chickens. I didn't know how to raise chickens. I didn't really know anything. So I was going by what my husband was teaching me and what others, farmers that we came across and, you know, learning from Dr. Ridgely and Sister Ann things because I really didn't have any idea. And that's why I always went every year to Founders Day because I would learn so much from listening to Dr. Ridgely and Sister Ann and watching them. and seeing how they developed the farm to be where it is now. So we had the chickens. The chickens lay eggs, and I thought I could just stick my hand in there and just grab the eggs. But lo and behold, that's not how you do that. I just stuck my hand in there, and the chickens started pecking me, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm screaming. And my husband's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, the chickens just bit me. So I've learned a lot. I've learned that the importance of sustaining your own food, and especially in this pandemic right now, it is utterly so important that we get some land. Even if we, if you just have a backyard, get out there and get you some food and grow your own food, because you cannot trust anything that's in these grocery stores. I do have to say that. So, I would say to anyone that is looking to transition from the city life to come to living in the country, just be patient. You got to have a lot of patience. And as a sister, I learned how to sew down since I've been down there. I learned how to can. I've learned how to freeze dry my food. I've learned a lot of things from being in the country now that I had no idea things could be done, because, like I said, I lived in New Jersey. I could just go to the grocery store whenever I chose to, or, dump in my car. I didn't have to drive 10 miles to my grocery store like I do in Georgia, at my house now. So if I forget something, oh, my Lord, the stories I could tell you that I would go grocery shopping and I forgot something, and I'm like, oh, I got to go all the way back in town to get this. And so I've learned to make sure I have a list. I make sure I have a list, and I know the day that I'm going, make sure everything is done that way. And I had to learn also, to, like I said, having patience and watching my husband and listening to what he says and, just following his guide, because, of course, he was born and raised there, so he knew stuff that I had no idea about. I never even knew a cow did what a cow did. I didn't know a cow ate all day long and then sat and regurgitated and do all this, all these things. But this was all new for me.
Right.
So, I didn't know that. Yeah. I learned a lot of things, I tell you. And then going on and researching. I used to go to the library a lot to research, because at the time when I left in 2006, YouTube was up, but it wasn't up like it is now. So I didn't really know that much about YouTube and computers, because being out in the country, I didn't have internet like I needed it until, now that time has made it a little better, I can have it. So I would go to the library, read a lot of books. I learned a lot. I had gardening books come into magazines, and I learned those things. And then, like I said, going to the farm with you all to the end, I learned a lot, listening to Dr. Ridgely and watching and getting out there. And now I'm not afraid of dirt, I could say. I don't mind getting dirty. So that's about what I've learned. I try every time I come back and forth to New Jersey, because all of my family, of course, is in New Jersey. So I would I always try to get in the believers here that's at the mosque in Plainfield. I would try to get them to, come on down, just come to the Founders Day. Come and see what the farm looks like. Just get a little bit of what, because we're not going to be able to live in this concrete jungle forever. And lo and behold, look at what's happening.
Right.
A lot of us are going to have to come up out of New Jersey and New York and Philadelphia and all these different city lives. We're going to have to go to the country living, because that's what's going to sustain us. That's the only way we're going to know our food. Now we're canning. The sisters are learning to can. So now I'm getting all kinds of calls at the end. Everybody's calling me. Oh, Sister Jennifer, really? can you help me with this canning? Okay, can I FaceTime you? Can I Zoom you? And I'm like, wow, I was trying to get them to do it 10 years ago when I had learned it and was trying to striving hard to, and I've learned it. I've gotten where, you know, I have a lot of stuff stocked up and, you know, we're doing good, but just wish they could have caught on to it, you know, a little sooner. Mm-hmm. Well, praise be Allah, they're getting it. So that's my story. That's what I've been going through. So, like I said, I would just always say to believers that are thinking about leaving the city and coming to the country is to have patience. Know that it's not going to be something that's going to be just, you know, 2-3 bang, boom, everything is done. You know, it's a process. You have to be willing to work and get things established, you know, because it's hard. We have a greenhouse now. We have, you know, like I said, the cows, the goats, you know, it's hard work. It's not something that it's for somebody that's going to be lazy. You got to know that you got to get up. You got to be out there. You got to be working, you know, sun up to sundown, like it says. So,
right.
That's my story. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, I remember, Sister Jennifer, you may not even remember this, but we were there. Uh-huh. Sister Jennifer and her husband, every other year, well, what we had started was maybe around, I think it was Labor Day or somewhere, we started having the first farm program there on your farm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but that kind of faded out, and hopefully we can pick that back up.
Yeah.
But, I remember being there, and Sister Jennifer, I met her sister, one of her sisters anyway, and this sister, she sowed beautifully. She just was doing it up, and Sister Jennifer, when we were doing the sowing, said, I wanted to sew and I wanted to learn, and I thought about, I didn't have anybody here to teach me. She said, I got on that sewing machine and I taught myself. Now, to me, that's the God. That's what gods do. They see a problem and they go at that problem. She saw it. She knew she had to do it. So she did it. She did
it. Yes, ma'am.
And I will always remember that. And it reminds me of something I had to do when I started canning. This was oh so many years ago. Nobody, I was in Macon. Nobody was canning at that time.
Mm.
I said, gosh, so I went to my older sister. I got my mother's old canner, and it has the rubber gaskets on it. So I had to go and find the gasket and all of that stuff. And I remember you have to let the steam out of this thing.
Mm.
So
mm.
What I did, there was a store in Macon that sold canners. So I went in there, and I opened a box, and I read the canning manual. I didn't take it. I read it standing there. And I went home, and I started canning. It was the first time I had canned, and, you know, I've been doing it ever since. You know, I used to watch my mother when I was a little girl and my older sister, but I had never done it myself. You know, I used to prep vegetables for my mother and all of that, but as far as operating the canner, I had not done it. So doing things like that, and you taught yourself.
Yes.
So had you canned before you moved to the farm?
No, that's what I was saying to the end, and you're right, because I had never sewed before, and I wanted to sew, and I desired it, and like you said, my mom was a seamstress. She sewed, and my sister, like you said, she's perfect, and they would sew all the time, and I would help and give stuff to them, but I never actually got on the sewing machine. But while I was in Georgia, in Dublin, one day I was at the library. Like I said, I spent a lot of time in the library reading books, and I said, you know, I'm going to teach myself how to sew because I need to learn how to sew. And I'm in the country, and you sit there and you see where I'm at. There's nobody around
yeah.
me. There was no one there to help me. You know, I could make a phone call, and, you know, my sister would walk me through a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But I got the book, like you said, with the Canon, and this is what I did with Canon, and this is what I did with sewing. I got a book on sewing. I got the book on Canon. I read the book on sewing from front cover to the back cover. And I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes, but I realized I had to have patience, like you said. And I would pray every time I would get to do it. I would do a prayer. And Allah brought me, he took me through it because, like you said, he saw the desire that I had to do it. And I wanted to do something for myself. I wanted to make my own clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the same thing with the Canon. I never even heard of Canon, Sister Ann, until I moved. I had never
really?
Heard of it. I don't ever remember seeing my parents, you know, because like I said, I was born and raised in New Jersey, and my parents were in New Jersey, so I had never even saw anybody doing Canon, never even knew what it was, but I got a book, like you said, I brought a Canon, a canner, and I just read it from front to cover, and I practice, you know, like I said, you make the mistakes, you know, here and there, but
right.
you learn to qualify yourself to it once you just, and you keep doing it, and I just kept doing it, and that's pretty much, that's how I learned to can it, and that's exactly how I learned to sewing.
Right. Well, I'm sure you can attest to you know, you mentioned not having what we call neighbors right next door and all. But that's one
Correct.
Of the things I love about the country.
Oh, God, yes. yes.
You know, it would be hard to convince someone else, a city person who is surrounded by people all the time, that they could actually learn to enjoy this. Because to tell you the truth, that's the way we are. You know, everybody mm-hmm. needs some space. Everybody needs some alone time, some downtime.
Mm-hmm. You're right. And you know what else at the end, like you said, my first 6 months there, I have to be really, really honest, It was an adjustment because, like you said, I had been so used to hearing fire trucks and police and people
right.
outside screaming and yelling and talking and people up and down the street, cars up and down the road, you know, the street all the time. And so I had, you know, I was acclimated to that. So the first couple of months I was there, I was like, oh, my God, how do people sleep with this quietness, you know? So I had to really, and then I realized what did it for me, and I'm saying this to whoever's on the call that's listening, that's thinking about leaving the city life. What did it for me is it made me feel closer to Allah because I had,
oh,
like you said, that
yes.
that quiet time that I would be able to sit back, do prayers, and you do rakahs, and you could like. Really, it's like I felt a lot like all around it because it was so quiet and I didn't have all that noise. I didn't have all those distractions and sounds and things. And it was just like I could go on my carport and actually do, you know, my prayers. And all I heard was the birds and the, you know, just
right.
God's creation outside, and that was it, and that's what it did it for me. And I know some people are probably like, oh my God, I just need to hear some sounds. But once you experience it and you feel that closeness to Allah, it's like you love it. You wouldn't want to go.
Yes, because I can attest to that, because I'm outside and I hear the birds all the time. You know, I wonder where they go. well, I guess they go in the nest when it's raining and storming like this. But yeah. I'm sitting out, and I hear the birds. And I'm just amazed. And I see so many birds now. And we have cats yeah. now. My husband got cats. So he had two. And I saw where a cat had killed a bird yesterday. And I'm thinking, this darn cat, how does he get a bird? You know, he must have found a nest or something. And it was a red bird. I see a lot of them all the time. But I see that a lot of times when I'm reading, they tell you, you have to be, if you're going to have birds, you have to be careful of cats and all of this thing. Now, I have a goldfish pond, and I see the cats going near the goldfish pond, but they don't like water. So they won't go in the pond.
Yeah, they don't.
Mess with the goldfish, but if they could, they would be over in there. But it's therapeutic. It's
yeah.
It's all of that. All of
yeah.
that.
All of it.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned your husband. Now, I know he had been away for a long time. Now, when he came back, did he have trouble readjusting or getting back into things?
No, that's what was so amazing to me is because I would sit back and watch him like, wow, you've been gone for 30, 40 years from down here, and you came here and just started doing stuff like you had never left. And I'm sitting there looking at him, and I'm saying, how do you remember all of this when you hadn't done it for 30 years? He said what happened with him is that once he got back and just started doing stuff, it's like he said, it's like the Lord just gave it all back to him, and he just remembered it all. And then, like I said, from us coming down there to you all to the farm during Founders Day and you all coming up and we, you know, going back and forth, he learned a lot more from Dr. Ridgely. And then he keeps doing. And so he's one of those type of people where if he do it and he does it wrong, he going to figure out, okay, I got to do it. I'm going to do it a different way, and I'm going to get it done. And then, and so that's how it is. But for him, it wasn't really, it was more of an adjustment for me than it was for him. Because like I said, him being born and raised there, it just all started coming back to him little by little. Every day he would do this, and then he would remember, and then he reminisce, and then he want to take me on these rides through the country and these back dirt roads. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're going to have me over here where the Ku Klux Klan is at. So he would, you know, but it helped him from why he did that. Because I asked him, why do you want to go back to where you grew up at? Because he grew up on the slave quarters. And so he took me back there. And I saw those slave quarters, and he said he just went back because he just wanted to see, now that he had Islam and understanding of self and the teachings from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said it helped him to remember what he went through as a child growing up in Georgia, you know, the things happened to him. And he remembers a lot of stuff. He took me in a lot of places that I was like a little sketchy on, but I was like, okay, Allah, keep me safe. So, but yeah, that it wasn't that much of an adjustment for him. Just a little something, and he just had to remember it, you know, because the quietness, like you said, he loved it. He just, that was something he always wanted anyway. So.
Right.
Yeah, for him it wasn't that bad.
Okay. Well, I just wondered because I'm thinking, I would hate to have to live in a northern climate. I think about it and wonder, you know, how do people manage the snow and the ice and the I just can't imagine that. I can't imagine living that way.
It's horrible. It's not. It was never. I remember growing up here in New Jersey where it snowed so much that when you opened your door, all you saw was snow, and you like couldn't really get out of your house. My dad and my brothers had to shovel their way our way out of the house. You know, that's how much snow. So the climate in Georgia, oh my God, I would never. I don't want to ever have to live in New Jersey ever again. And like you said, to live through that snow and ice and that freezing cold. And you know, I remember one day, a couple months ago, or probably maybe last year, it might have been last year, it was some snow like flurries in Dublin, and everybody's like, "Oh, it's snowing!" I was like, "Y'all have no idea what snow is, okay?" Like these little flurries in the sky. But then I realized, like you're saying, if you never lived through it, it's something new for you. So yeah, you don't want to live through it, Suzanne. It's horrible.
Oh yes, I can imagine. Only imagine. But I can remember we were there about a month or so ago, and going into town, and you know one of the places we went to, and you just could not hardly get in a place, and you were stopping and speaking to everybody.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is in the South, especially in small towns. You know everybody, and you have to speak to everybody. And it's just the camaraderie that you don't get in big cities. I hear people talking, and you can tell that they don't have camaraderie with their neighbors neighbors. You know, there are people you just see doing your business. Because even in Dawson, I would use it for an example. Places I go, and especially on a regular basis, you know, everybody just know you, and the drugstore, the bank, places you go on a regular basis. It's just so good to be able to just walk in and to speak to everybody. Everybody's speaking to you. But people don't have that in big cities. They're just so disjointed.
Yeah, because I'll tell you this story that happened to me when I first moved down there. So when I moved down there, it was like in the month of June, like the end of June. I have two sons. My oldest son is 30 now, and my youngest one is 28. But the oldest one, I left him in New Jersey because he was in his last year of high school. And so I worked it out with my sister that she would keep him, let him finish high school up there, because I didn't want to take him out of her high school. And, you know, he in his last year, and, you know, you done prepared everything. You done went to junior prom and got everything. So I left him, brought my other son. My other son was starting high school. So, of course, he was upset with me because we got there in June, and then August had to start school. So he was already, like, highly disappointed with me at that point. But we had to go out, and he wanted to get school clothes. So she said, "Ann, this is like the first time I've really realized the camaraderie, like you said, of people and how everybody." Because here in New Jersey, hey, if you got somebody to speak to you, it was a miracle. Okay. So we walk into this store. The name of the store was called City Trends. And this is where we went in there to see, you know, buy him some school clothes, some jeans, and, you know, different things. We walked through the door, and the young lady says, "Good morning. Welcome to City Trends. How are you doing today? Let us know what we can do." Sister Ann, me and my son almost died. Like, we almost fell on the ground. We looked at each other. He looked at me, and he was like, "Do you know her, Mommy?" I was like, "No, I don't know her." So, and then from that on, in every store that I would go in, people would speak and be like, hey, how are you today? Let us know if we could do anything for you. Every store, everybody I come across, how are you doing today? Speaking. And so coming from New Jersey, where people don't speak to you, it was like, I was sitting there like, okay, this is going to really be okay. So I had been in Georgia for a couple of years before I came back to New Jersey. I came back to New Jersey to a family function. And I went into the store and I spoke to the lady and she didn't look at me. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, now I see why I love Georgia. Everybody speaks to you. Everybody's cordial to you. You don't get the, you know, rolling of the eyes when you go in the store. And I'm at the register buying something, and the young lady, she never said a word to me. She just looked at me. This was in New Jersey. And I'm saying to myself, oh, my God, this is why I love Georgia. I'm like you, I wouldn't want to live back in New Jersey for nothing. You just couldn't pay me enough to have to live there permanently ever again. I mean, I don't mind coming up here, coming up to New Jersey, visiting my sons, visiting my family, because, you know, all of my family is here. My dad is in Virginia, but I have 7 brothers and sisters, and everybody's in New Jersey. I have 2 sons, three grandsons, and they all in New Jersey. So, you know, I do come back and forth to visit them. But that's the one thing I have to say to the end, is that the speaking and the cordialness and the kindness that you get from people is like, oh, my goodness, I love it. I love it.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know, that's, you know, it's in our nature to want to bond and be with each other like that. And I hear my husband say it all the time, you know, the South is where we need to be.
It is.
We're forgetting this is not our original home. You know, most of us today were born on these lands. But remember now, we were captured and brought to these lands. And
right.
Most of us settled in the South. And from there, after we heard about things were better up north, you could get better jobs,
mm-hmm.
our people migrated up north and eventually out west and farther east. But it all started down south with
mm-hmm.
us being slaves and
mm-hmm.
Doing things of that nature. But now
mm-hmm.
we've had generations of people born up there, and they don't see the South as being a viable place to live. I've
mm-hmm.
had people to come to the farm and say, you're not scared out here when it gets dark?
I know, right?
It's so dark. Ooh, I couldn't drive out here. But now, you know, when I think, how magnificent Allah is. Allah
mm-hmm.
has made it where all of the cities, I don't care where you are, unless you're in Las Vegas, they can afford to have these street lights on like they used to.
You're right about that one.
Yes, I know. I've seen it even in Atlanta. I can remember years ago traveling through places like Atlanta, you know, the highways would just be all lit up. And now, you know, and I'm thinking, wow, they have stretches of highways that's dark. And I'm thinking, these people don't know, a lot of the younger people don't know what it was like back in the 60s and the early 70s, where before this disaster hit, America started really, really falling. That everybody was, everywhere you went, it was all lit up. But now
mm-hmm.
it's dark in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
So that comment to me, you know, that's just so passe now. And I'm thinking, it's dark. You're living in a city now where, you know, they don't have many lights
like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love.
What?
Sister Ann?
Uh huh.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
I apologize for interruption, but it's been 40 minutes, and I'd like to do a station break and invite some of our guests to ask some questions. Would that be okay?
That'll be just fine.
Yes, ma'am. So this is the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. And if you have any questions or would like to join the conversation, please press the 1 on your dial. And we have some people that are pressing 1. So can I go ahead and open a couple of lines?
You can.
Okay. Caller with the last 4 digits, 1964. What is your name and where are you calling from? Caller with the last 4 digits, 1964. Do you have a question or a comment? Okay. They may have pressed the number by mistake. And we have Dr. Ridgely. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Blame Islam. Sister Anna, Sister Jennifer, I'm really enjoying your conversation. And Sister Jennifer.
Yes.
You mentioned that you made a lot of mistakes when you learned how to sew. Have I seen you wearing any of those mistakes?
Yes, you might have saw me wearing a couple of those mistakes, but once I learned how to sew, I was able to fix a few of them. Yes, sir.
I'm just messing with you.
Yes, sir.
Sister Jennifer is, she's very attractive. You wouldn't think that she has grandchildren. The idea of her being this city cutie pie in Plainfield and now a country girl, anything is possible. Anything is possible.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
But I haven't seen you with the cows yet. I really need to see you with the cows. We've got to make a trip with them and Sister Ann just to see you interact with the cows. I just want to take a little video of that. I just can't even imagine that. So
you're right, Dr. Ridgely, because it took a lot for me to even get close to him, but now it's like I don't even mind.
Anything is possible.
But
it's different. People make transitions for different reasons to come back down south and everything. And of course, your husband is here and that brought you here. But it is a daunting thing to make such a transition because people, even with all the shooting and the noise in the cities, when I was staying with my brother in New York City, all night long I would hear bottles bursting in the back. You know what I mean? So I'm throwing bottles down, and all night long, bottles bursting. I'm like, what are they doing all night long, bursting bottles? What is this? You know what I mean? And, that life there, and then to move back out of that, people just not comfortable. People get used to their cool spot in hell, that's what I call it. And it's and it's hard for them to break away from that. But once they do, it's okay, and you don't want to go back. But everybody just gets acclimated to where they grew up at and you're used to. But we are so glad that you and Brother Willie came down back to Georgia. We have enjoyed you all so well. And, yeah, we do have to keep back up that Labor Day thing in the future. Well, thank you very much. For being who you are and talking to those sisters and everything about, that it's okay to get your fingers dirty. It's okay because you can always clean up. I mean, take a bath, you clean up, you put your nails on.
You must have been around my husband a lot because that's his favorite word. He's like, there's nothing that soap and water can't do. Soap and water will wash anything. That's his favorite word to me. He tells me that all the time. Whenever I say, I don't want to touch that, that's dirty, I don't want my hands to be like that, he's like, Sister Jennifer, serpent water will clean everything.
Oh, and there's one more thing I want to say. I've watched the transition of you all's home. Brother Willie put into it, and it is beautiful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is beautiful, and it's like, who the hell want to live in them damn apartments on top of each other?
I know, right?
When you can have a real nice a spread, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Nice. Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Yes, I've seen you interact with your cows. Now, we don't have animals here on Muhammad Farm, and I wonder how I would be with cows and chickens. Well, I think I do all right with chickens. We had a few chickens several years ago just as a trial basis, and, you know, I want to get chickens again. But, you know as well as anyone that, you know, in order to be a farmer with animals and a farmer growing vegetables, you know, unless you're doing a little bit of both, then, you know, it gets to be too much.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to have a big operation, that's where it really gets to be a problem. You have to do one or the other because they both take time.
A lot of time. You're right. It's you know, if we're doing it on a small scale, like you said, so it's okay because, you know, we have right now 13 cows. So it's not really that bad. A few chickens, 5-6 chickens. So it's just giving us enough where I have my own eggs. I don't have to buy eggs out of the grocery store, you know. So it's easier, like you said. But if we were going to do it like large, like Muhammad's Farm, that's totally different. You all have to stick to one thing and, you know, really work that. And Dr. Ridgely is doing an ops and yourself. I mean, it's like the best job. I think that anyone, he was that person that needed to be there. Anyone else, I don't know. I don't think they would have been able to accomplish, you know, what he's doing. Because you have to, like I said, I think what happens with us is, like Dr. Ridgely said, you have to have a love for and to know and understand it's okay to leave out of that where you were born and raised. Because I was born and raised in New Jersey. I lived here for, 40-something years. I'm 57 years old now, so I was in New Jersey for 40 years, so, and it was a difficult transition, but I did it, and I love it. I wouldn't trade it for anything else in the world. I thank Allah for giving me the experience and allowing me to have this experience so that, you know, when I do talk to sisters and they come up with the same thing, like you said, Sister Anne, oh, it's so dark out there. How do you do that? Like, okay, really? Like, you go outside in the dark anyway, so stop playing games, you know? Come on, we can do this.
Right. I remember a few years ago at Founders Day, some young sisters were down here, and they saw, what did they see? I think it was a cockroach outside, and they were saying, ooh-wee. A cockroach. I said, wait a minute. Y'all are vanguard. Now you tell me, you're going to be on post with the minister and somebody throw a cockroach.
And you're going to be running. Come on now.
Yeah. And you're going to be running. I said, conquer that fear and stomp him.
And keep it moving, right?
Yes. But we don't think about things like that. You know, we all militant and blah, blah this and blah, blah that. And then a cockroach can make you scream and run.
And run, right? Yeah, that's funny.
Okay. Brother Carlton, is there any more?
No, ma'am, not at this time.
Okay. Well, we'll continue, Sister Jennifer. It's like Dr. Ridgely said, you know, we can do a lot if we want to. And it's hard to understand
why someone, well, I guess it's not. It's not hard to understand why so many people are afraid to come down south. They still think the Klan is everywhere, but the Klan is up north too.
The Klan is probably more up north than it is and down in the south nowadays.
Right,
They fear stuff in New Jersey, so.
Right, and you hear about, I tell you, I get afraid when I'm in a place and they're talking about gang violence and you have to be careful, you can't go out and all this and all that. And I'm thinking, oh, man, gang violence. That reminds me of something. Here, a siren is something that, you know, you can't, you don't hear them. You know, I don't know about down in the city of Albany, but out here where we are, we don't hear sirens and stuff. And if you do, I tell you what, if you hear something like that up in Brownwood, everybody got to come out and see.
That's right. And that's the same thing here.
Everybody got to come out and see what's going on. Who is this and who is that? I remember going to a city council meeting up at Brumwood, and this was several years ago. And we're sitting there waiting for the meeting to start. This was in the summertime. It had not gotten dark. We're waiting on the meeting to start, and everybody's sitting there. Where's so-and-so? The mayor said, where's so-and-so? She ain't here yet. And he said, somebody go to the door and holler down the street and tell her to come on.
Now you know you can't do that in New Jersey, right? That's too funny. I love that. Yeah.
I thought that was so funny.
Yeah.
He was going to go to the door and holler down the street and tell her, come on, it's time for the meeting to start.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me of something. This is the end that Dr. Ridgely said. We gotta just let our people know that, excuse me, it's okay to be a little skeptical about moving to the South because you're so used to, you know, that city life that you've been living. So you kind of leery about it, but you got to understand and know, you got to take that leap, like you said, because this is where it all started, was here in the South. This is where when they brought us over on the slave ship, most of us was in the South, you know, and it's like you said, the need, because my husband even said the reason why they left New Georgia is because somebody else had left Georgia and was in New Jersey and was like, oh, you can make this amount of money, you can live a little better, blah, blah, blah. And that's why he ended up in New Jersey for 40, 50 years. It's because of that. But it's okay to be a little fearful of, okay, I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, we gotta take that chance because this is where we're going to have to live. We got to live this. We got to come back to the South. We got to come back because you can't trust anything that's going on in New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, L.A., you know, all these big cities with all of this stuff going on. It's so much easier to live life in the South. And I didn't know that until I started living there, but it's so important that, and whenever I go to New Jersey and visit and tell anyone, I always say to everyone, just you know, come to Founders Day, especially in a nation, come to Founders Day and just look, you know, stay a weekend and see what it's like. Go out at night and sit in the peace. I have people, I'm working on trying to get them there this year. Again, hopefully we can have Founders Day this year. And, you know, we could bring some more people now and let them see what life is like. Because the ones that came last year, they were like, oh, y'all should have came. We had such a good time. I didn't realize it was going to be like that. So, you know, I think if they could just get out of there for a weekend just to see, you know, what it's mm-hmm. like to live in the South. They would like it.
Oh, we got a caller to the end.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Caller with the last four digits, 5586. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Brother William calling from Albany, but I'm not in Albany at the moment. I just wanted to quickly say, as the guests were speaking, coming from the north myself, the city that I came from was 30, 40 miles outside of Chicago, called Gary, Indiana. But when I grew up there in the 70s, it was what some would say a small town at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
what I've realized is being down in Albany now, that a person's personality, some people like a small town, even though I grew up having access to the big city and lived in Chicago and St. Louis and some other big cities, Atlanta. I enjoyed the small town feel more than I did the big city, but that was for me. And then I don't say that it's right or wrong or good or bad. I just say that some people enjoy a small town, and whereas other people may enjoy the big city. And there are some amenities to the small town that you don't get in the big city, and vice versa.
That's right.
And then I was also able to teach my daughter, as she was learning her vocabulary younger, when she was younger, a word like quaint, something that you have to be able to see it and experience it to really grasp what the word means. But when I brought her down to Albany, she was able to actually have exposure to the small town as opposed to being up north near Chicago. And there were just things that I want my children to be able to experience so that when they get older, they can say for themselves, I like a small town, or I don't like a small town, or I like a big city, or I don't like a big city. But if you've never had the experience of one or the other, where nowadays it's hard to find a small town, well, I won't say it's hard to find it, but most people, I would say, haven't had that experience unless they grew up there.
Right.
But you have to have the experience to be able to have the gauge on which one you like. Last thing I would like to say is, coming from the north, the racism aspect, I use the word covert and overt, where when I came to the south, I already knew it would be overt, whereas up north it's there, but in my eyes it's more covert, even though it may be more prominent now. But, you know, I'd rather know that the smile, especially growing up, to know that the smile that someone has given you is genuine and not be fooled by it, whereas coming to the south, I know that that's a fake smile because of the overt nature thing. But that was all that I wanted to say. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes,
thank
right.
you.
Thank you very much for your call, Brother William. And Sister Ann, we're down to the last 2 minutes, Sister Ann. That hour's gone by real fast.
Well, okay, Sister Jennifer, I'll let you have the floor. Any parting thoughts that you want to share?
Yes, ma'am, I do. I just want to just let out the audience know, just like Brother William said, you know, some people are not going to enjoy the quiet, quaint, you know, life like living in the South, but then there's the small town feel, and you know, you used to, some of us are just, you just rather have all that noise, and you really can't live down in the South and stuff. But it would be nice to just try visiting and seeing, you know, don't just say, okay, no, I am not gonna do that, that is not for me. Just try it, see what it feels like, you know, and then make a decision from there. But don't just automatically say, no, that's not the life for me. Try it out, see what you like, and you may love it. Because I did, and I do have to say I absolutely loved it. And I thank you all for allowing me to, you know, tell you my experiences, and hopefully it is helping someone that will hear it and say, okay, I'm thinking about, I think I might try it. But I thank you for that.
Okay, you are more than welcome. I don't know why I didn't think of you earlier when we were trying to get guests on the show. It's always easy to overlook what's right at hand.
Right.
So
right.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you later.
All right. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
Messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone.
Alone.
I never at once felt so alone.
Alone.
I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my force and truth. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more countries.
Woo!
Fast eyes burst into Ripley, where the ghost of childhood haunts me. Walk the roads my forefathers walk, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came. My family tree, my family name. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my